I matched into internal medicine.
What does it take to get into the residency of your dreams when it seems like all the odds are stacked against you? My name is John Arshadi, and I want to welcome you to the Road to Residency podcast. This is the show where we break down inspiring personal journeys of passionate physicians who had the courage and the commitment to take purposeful action to achieve their goals and serve their communities. Hey, champions, and welcome back to another episode of the Road to Residency podcast. I'm John Arshadi, and I'm here today with Dr. Nirmal Jodhkar, who is originally from a very small village in India where her father was actually the first physician from that village. And she later herself became the first female physician from the village. She graduated in 2019 and filled up her CV with telerotations and remote research after not matching on her first attempt. However, it all paid off because this year she matched into internal medicine and couldn't be happier. Dr. Kaur, welcome to the show and congratulations on matching this year.
Thank you so much. It's really nice to be here.
And it's great to have you. I'm so excited. So Dr. Kaur, you have a very interesting background. Let's rewind a little bit and go back. Yeah, I want to hear your story.
Yeah, so like you already mentioned, my dad was the first physician in our whole area, and it was the first time in our family someone went to med school. So that was really, really inspiring for me in general. But once you have one of your parents as a doctor, especially in India, it's like almost a rule that if your parents are a doctor, you need to become a doctor. But obviously, it's your own choice. But since I always saw him like working with patients day in and day out and being satisfied with what he does, I had never ever thought of becoming anything else but a doctor. So, but yeah, I had different challenges being a girl and like belonging to a small town. It was like a whole different challenge, but eventually, like with the support of my parents and with the support of my family, I overcame them.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I'm sure you're going to be an inspiration to all the girls in that village who want to become physicians.
I hope so.
Absolutely. So what made you decide to pursue medicine in the United States?
So the first time I came to the United States, it was basically my dad who told me that, okay, we have done a lot in India and I really want you to achieve something higher as compared to what I have achieved in my life till now. And I thought, okay, I can give it a try. I can try. If it works, okay. If it doesn't, it's also fine. Like I can be a doctor anywhere in the world and still help people. So the first time I came here for rotations, I was really, really impressed by the huge difference that we have in the practice of medicine, not just the quality of medicine, but it's probably the quantity as well, because people here get so much advanced medical care as compared to India. And you can offer so much more treatment options as compared to India. So that really impressed me. Also, like the dealing of patients was way different over here as compared to India, because the patient population here is so much more literate and they know what's going on, and they ask you very, very reasonable questions for everything. And that really interested me that, okay, I need to know everything so that I can answer it to my patients. Unlike in India, where a doctor says something and that is the final word because the patients just believe that, okay, this is it. So I think that was one of the biggest reasons for me to come here to US to get my education.
For sure. Excellent. And did you find it intimidating at all to, study for the USMLEs and, you know, prepare?
So overall, like my personality is like very type B. I don't stress at all. So it was not really intimidating, but I would definitely say that it was a whole new system and I did not have any family here in the US. So I was by myself. And as you know, like not a lot of people from med schools in third world countries get into USMLE or try. So I did not have a lot of friends as well trying with me. So I got that lonely feeling a lot of times, but when I saw that what my final goal was, that was what really mattered. And when I knew that my family was standing by my side, no matter what, I didn't think like anything else would really matter.
Yeah, that's excellent. All right. So how was the process for you? Let's talk about when you decided to apply. for Match. You had already taken your exams and you'd already done some rotations. How did the process go, and what did you learn from the first time around when you didn't match?
Yeah, so I had already given like all of my exams, like step one, step two, CK, as well as CS, and I had cleared them all in the first attempt, even though I had average scores in all of them in the 220s, but I was pretty confident that scores are not all that matter, and I have built up my profile with rotations and research stuff and everything. So I also planned that when I applied in September 2019, I planned to give my step three by October, which I did and which I also passed. And I thought that, okay, this would make a huge difference to my application and I would get much more interviews, which I did not, in fact. But the number of interviews I got was 5 during my first year. And I was really stressed out about them, and I prepared so much for them. And I think I over-prepared, and I just probably came out as a little crammed, maybe. Right. I'm not sure. But that is the only thing that I could figure out might have gone wrong, in addition to maybe my average scores. But that was the first time around.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know we spoke earlier, and you said you also did a lot of, you got involved into a lot of research. Yes. From the first time to the second time. So how would somebody get involved in research? Where do they even start if they don't know where to start from?
So when I got my email that I did not match, it was, first of all, the first week was like, okay, the world is over, nothing's going to happen now. And I was so depressed. And then I thought that, okay, I've given myself enough time to be sad about it. Now I need to work on it if I really want to get it. And I thought, okay, I'll just try one more time. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. So I thought that apart from the exams, now I don't have any of the exams left to do. So I can only do like extra stuff. And I already had a lot of rotations. So I thought, okay, like rotations at that point of time, because of COVID, they were all closed down, shut down. So I could not even apply for them. So the research was the only option. And I tried to ask a few of my seniors who could guide me, but none of them had been involved in research because apparently it's not the most important thing in your application. So I just started it on my own through a few blogs that I saw. And I formed a group of medical students. Four or five of us, we started working on a systematic review, and we didn't know where to go about it or anything about it. So we just Googled stuff and read other systematic reviews and saw that, okay, we can do this. Okay, we can do this. We divided the responsibilities. But eventually what struck me was I got to know of the website clinicaltrials.gov, which has all the trials which are going on currently in the United States right now, along with the contact information of all the doctors. So I started emailing them, and I probably emailed around 1500 to 2000 doctors before I actually got one or two positive responses. And for that positive response, out of those one or two positive responses, I got a position for a research trainee at Mayo Clinic, Florida. So yeah, that was like, okay, you definitely have to work hard to, you know, get a position in research, especially.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. You know, it's funny because a lot of the people that I talk to are self-taught researchers. You know, they had no idea where to start. They didn't take a course. They had to go look for it on their own.
Yeah.
I have a question. So these 1,500, 2,000 people that you emailed, was it like a template that you send, or was it a specific email for every program?
Yeah, so I sent specific emails to different doctors with respect to their projects, with respect to their specialty or super specialty, so that like I can show that, okay, I'm interested in this, not like specifically in all different specialties, within internal medicine, different super specialties. That's how I sent the emails, and with respect to the clinical trial that I was referring to. But right. I also gave them an option that if they don't have a position in this trial, I can always try for the next one, or if they have any volunteer opportunities, just anything at all.
Excellent. Yeah. And the reason I asked that question is because that's something I tell students as well, is, you know, try to stay away from templates and like pre-written things. When you reach out to a doctor or a program or anything, you want to make it personalized to them. Otherwise, they can see right through it and they're not even going to bother answering you.
Yeah, they've seen thousands of emails, so they know, okay, this person has written it personally and this one is like a template. So definitely.
Right, for sure. Excellent. And how did COVID affect all of this stuff that you were doing?
Yeah, so COVID affected a lot professionally as well as personally. So professionally, I could not attend any rotations in 2020. So I had to do like 2 tele rotations, which were also a great experience, like sitting far away as well. I got to use EMR. I got to like talk to patients, take histories, everything. So it was, they were really great experiences. I had a lot of trouble personally as well. There was a lot of stuff going on just in my personal life, a lot of uncertainty because of not matching and everything. But overall, I think what I taught myself was just keep going with the flow. Things would be good. And when things are supposed to get in line, they're going to all get in line together and you'll be fine. So yeah, self-motivation was what probably just kept pushing me.
That's great. I love that because, you know, this pandemic has affected all of us. Definitely. And, you know, some in a positive way, some in a negative way, but everybody's been affected.
Definitely.
And it's good. It's very inspiring to hear people, you know, get through, you know, get their goals done through the pandemic. Excellent. How did the interviews go for you this year with the virtual interviews?
I think so. Personally, I would still prefer in-person interviews because I've been through the best of both worlds, kind of. But the virtual interviews were not bad at all. I think you feel much less conscious when you're sitting in front of your laptop and as compared to sitting with 20 other applicants in a room with the interviewers. So overall, I would say it was comparatively easier for, especially for people who are maybe introverts or who are not as confident, which can be one of, like I can be included in introvert category, definitely. Yeah, overall, I think you get to know the program better in an in-person environment. And also the program gets to know you better in an in-person environment. But like, if one of the two have to be done, the virtual would be good too.
Right. Traditionally, there used to be a pre-dinner with the residents and then the actual interviews. Was it the same this way this time around?
Yeah, so most of the programs that I interviewed with, they offered a pre-interview dinner and they just told us to get our snacks and drinks and whatever we want to talk with the residents. But once again, it was still virtual. So it's like if you have like 20 interviewees who are talking to just 3 or 4 residents, it gets a little difficult as compared to if you're sitting face to face at a dinner. I at least got all the information that I needed from the residents and I could ask the questions that I wanted to ask. So the most important thing is you definitely have to be outspoken and just keep yourself noticeable when you're in a virtual environment.
Sure. So what was one of the hardest questions you got during the interview?
The hardest question. It was probably like, what would you change if you could, like, about the whole journey till now? And that question was added on by, like, what was the most difficult part of the whole USMLE journey? That was probably the hardest question. Like, I was not prepared to answer that, but yeah, that was the hardest question.
Right. And, you know, towards the end of the interview, they always ask you, so what questions do you have for us? And what questions do you recommend for future applicants? What questions do you recommend to stay away from? And then what questions do you recommend to ask?
So I would say, like, stay away from generalized questions, which you can just ask any other program because the programs can see through it. They interview like thousands of applicants every year. Generalized questions would be like, what do you have to do in the area? Or questions like, what is the rotation schedule like? Things which are already mentioned on the website, definitely don't ask them. Things like, what are the benefits given to the residents? Or like I would definitely say a question like, what do residents do in their free time would be good to ask from the residents, but not from the program director or someone. Mm-hmm. So like definitely segregate all your questions. Some of the questions that I definitely asked were because I was working in research. So I made a point to ask them about the research endeavors at the program. And I made a point to like go through the faculty's research publications so that I can talk about our common interests because it just gives something to have a conversation about. Then I also asked them about the different electives that they offer because I'm interested in a less preferred specialty, endocrinology. Like most of the people are into cardio or gastro or critical care, but like endocrinology gets a little overlooked. So I definitely made it a point to ask about it so that they know, like, okay, I have a fellowship goal as well. So yeah.
Excellent. Those are excellent tips. Thank you. All right. So you gave us some great interview tips. What did you change in your interviews from the first time you tried to match to the second time when you actually did match?
Yeah. So the first time I really, really prepared a lot for my interviews. I just went through the questions repeatedly. I kept practicing them in my head. I kept practicing them in front of the mirror. While that process may work for some people, it definitely did not work for me. I probably, showed up as someone who was too overprepared. So the second time around, what I did was I knew, okay, for each of the questions that I thought could be asked, I prepared bullet points for them that, okay, these are the things that I would like to mention. And I just went through them once the night before the interview that, okay, so that I just don't forget those bullet points. And I also prepared special points for each of the faculty who was going to interview me and special questions just for them, just focused at them, not for the whole program in general. So I think that really helped me. And I just tried this year for the interview to be just a conversation, just like we're having right now, so that it's comfortable for the both of the people to just talk about whatever you want to talk about. And it should not be like, okay, here the answer ends, something like that. It should just keep going with the flow. I think the second time around, I think I was able to achieve that definitely.
That's excellent, excellent advice. You know, you never want to sound too robotic. You want to sound like a human being.
Yeah.
So it's good that you did that. And also, one of the things that people commonly overlook is, you know, when you are in an interview, you want to make the conversation personal. Mm-hmm. So take the time to do that research beforehand and find out, what is this person like? What research have they done? You know, what is it that... You can even ask the residents. Don't be afraid to ask the residents for some information about them, and make that interview personal. Yeah, they'll remember you more.
I added a lot of personal touch, like by talking about the sports that I have been playing, because I'm a national level badminton player. So I talked about that. I talked about basketball. I'm a state level basketball player. I talked about my dog, because people love dogs. Who doesn't love dogs? I also talked about my favorite show, Friends. Just so that it's a very, very free-flowing conversation, so that if the other person also likes it, like, there are very less people who don't like Friends. So generally people do respond back to that. And so just the conversation keeps on going, and just keep a smile on your face all the time. Like, not a weird smile, but just be happy about being here.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. One of the important things of the application process is a personal statement. When did you start writing it, and what do you recommend for people to concentrate on while they write it?
So I think I probably started writing it in April of the year that I wanted to apply in, and the second time around again. And still, like, all the juniors that I'm guiding right now, and they ask me, okay, what should we do? And I tell them, the first thing you need to start focusing on is your personal statement, because they are going to read it. As much as you feel that this is a long document and they won't read it probably, but they are going to read it. And that is the first thing which is going to show them what kind of person you are. And what I always had in my mind was that when they read your personal statement, the first thing that comes to their mind should be, oh my God, I want to meet this person. And that is what your personal statement should convey. So definitely it should not be a monotonous personal statement. And that doesn't mean that you have to include every interesting thing about your life. And definitely don't go with the cliche stuff like death of a family member or disease in your friends or something, because a lot of people do that. Just like go through your own personal life, like what all you have been through and what all has helped you to become the person that you are today. For me, it was sports, because I have been a sports player almost all my life. And that is what I made my personal statement around. I related everything to sports and how sports made me the kind of doctor I am today. And I just related everything with it. So I think that really worked in my favor, because when a person would talk to me, it would really convey them my passion for playing sports, playing badminton, playing basketball. So definitely write something that you can 100% convey during the interview as well. And I would suggest how to start writing it would be like start making bullet points of whatever comes to your mind, that whatever the most important life events for you were till now, till 25, 30 years of age. And then divide them into different paragraphs that, okay, this I'll write in the first paragraph, this in the second paragraph, and then like start forming sentences out of it. I myself probably wrote, like my partner helped me write the personal statement, and I probably wrote like at least 10 to 15 drafts of the same personal statement. And by then, like my partner was very, very strict about it. And he's like, no, write it again. So yeah, I wrote a lot of drafts, and finally, like maybe it was the 15th or 16th draft that actually made it to the ERAS profile.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I also advise students, because I went through the same thing and I did more than 15 drafts actually. And I actually did them, you know, months apart. Sometimes you'll write something today and then you'll look at it maybe in a few weeks and you'll think to yourself, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you want to start as early as possible. As a matter of fact, if you're planning on applying to the 2022 match, you should be starting now with your personal statement, with your researching the programs. If you're not doing that, you should start now and, you know, reach out and we can help you with how to do that.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if you're applying, like for most international graduates, they apply for more than one or two specialties. So for each specialty, you definitely need to have a separate personal statement, because it needs to scream that, okay, this is me as a person and this is why I want to do this specialty. So definitely don't use the same personal statement and just change the specialty in it, mm-hmm. because that does not make sense at all. And even like for some of the university programs, some of the programs which are very rich in research, and some of the community programs, I had different paragraphs for them as well, so that they know that, okay, this is my focused, this is my focus basically, that, okay, I want to get into this program because you have such a such rich research program, or I want to get in this program because I want to serve the community. Even though, like, I want to do both of them, like, not all programs can offer everything to you. So, yeah. So, definitely, like, focus on what kind of a program it is and the kind of personal statement you're writing for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great tips. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Great. And if there was one piece of advice, one, you know, piece of inspiration you'd want to give to future applicants, what would it be?
I would say, don't let yourself down just because you don't have a good score, just because you don't have rotations at a university hospital, or like you don't have like stellar letters of recommendation. Just keep believing in yourself. Just tell yourself that, okay, you've set this goal. Today or tomorrow, someday you'll get there. As long as you keep working on it, as long as you keep trying to build on it, and don't just like stop right there that, okay, no, this is it. It's not going to happen. It didn't happen once. It's not going to happen. That's not true, because I've seen people who have applied for 7-8 years and then matched. So that was the inspiration for me, that if they can do it, I can do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dr. Kaur, I thank you for your time. It was very insightful. I enjoyed having you, and I hope to have you on the show again, you know, while you're in residency, maybe you can give us some more insight.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was really great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we'll see the rest of you in the following episode next week. Stay tuned every Friday. We're going to have a new episode come out, and hopefully it'll help you along your journey. Please feel free to ask us questions. Our contact information is going to be in the show notes below. Dr. Kaur, is it okay if we put in your LinkedIn and people can reach you? Reach out to us if you have any questions, concerns, if you have anything that you'd like to be addressed on the show, or whatever it is. Don't hesitate to reach out, and we'll be in touch. If you haven't already, please rate and review the podcast. Share it with your friends and get this message out there, because this is a time where a lot of people are skeptical and they're saying, I'm an older grad, I'm an IMG, I have trouble with the USMLEs, there's no way I can compete, what do I do? Well, we want to show you that there is hope. Actually, right now is the best time to match as an IMG. You know, our match rates have gone up from 48% in 2010 when I graduated medical school to 61% in the 2020 match. That's a significant jump. And as a matter of fact, more than 25% of the U.S. healthcare system is made up of international grads. So know that you can do it. You will do it. Just don't give up. And I hope to see you in the next episode.